Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Revolution Radio. It's May 5th, 2010, Cinco de Mayo, and it's snowing here on May 5th. Anyway, good evening all. This is Dr. Kate. I am privileged to have this evening Mr. James Dowling from Michigan. He was a delegate to the Continental Congress, and he'll be joining us in a few minutes, but I wanted to first, welcome everyone, and to those who will be listening later, thank you for dropping in. Revolution Radio, I wanted to just kind of give you an update of what's happening with Revolution Radio. It started out as, you know, just a small talk show with myself after leaving Constitutional Radio, and it is mushroomed now to a number of things, and you know, in a major way, it's about revolution in my own self as well as other people, and about the revolution that we are in as a people right now, because it occurs on so many different levels. So I would call this evening really constitutional governance, although we cover a number of different subjects. and have different guests, but the idea is to really talk about and promote the Articles of Freedom and to talk about what constitutional governance is. Like, for example, Arizona and Governor Brewer and the 70% of Arizonans who support the immigration bill are, you know, this is constitutional governance. This is when both about the 10th Amendment and when the states have the right to do what they can do, and if the federal government is failing to do what it does, what it's supposed to do, well, then, you know, it's up to the states. And, you know, there's a lot of hue and cry. There's a lot of claims of racism, but, you know, it's not the case. Obama throws a race card and so forth. So constitutional governance, and it also means something in our daily lives as well, is pretty important. But we touch a lot of subjects, including the spiritual, really God-oriented, I would say Christian-oriented, and so forth. And that also reflects, you know, pretty frankly, what's happened to me in the last year and, frankly, from the Continental Congress experience where, you know, there's no way 120 people can come together and produce a document like that and not have some divine intervention, because really we're a handful. We're a handful of people. We're all very different from all over the country. And how could that happen? So in any case, so constitutional governance and where we go as far as a revolution means really living what we say and knowing what we are living and so forth and acting on it. So as a foundation, that's Wednesday nights. Now, Thursday nights, I was just very fortunate to have Red Beckman, constitutional scholar from Washington State, who's written most famously Walls in Our Minds and also a book called The Law that Never Was. He did the research on the 16th Amendment and proves it in his book that you know, of the 35 states that they needed to ratify the 16th Amendment at that time, only two ratified it. Every other state changed it, modified it, ratified the wrong amendment. You know, just really, this is very serious. And of course, since 1913, I suppose, we've been taxed illegally on our labor, on our brains, on how we do things. So, and it's people get thrown in jail for talking about this. So anyway, I am fortunate to have Red Beckman on Thursday nights, along with Continental Congress delegate Terry Dodd from Colorado, both of whom are colleagues and have known each other for a long time. And Terry is a longtime activist and so forth. And they do this show called Walls in Our Minds. And that's the book Red Beckman wrote. And it really, so much, I know you agree with this, so much of what's going on right now is we are breaking down the walls in our own minds about what we thought was supposed to be the situation. And we have to tear these walls down in order for us to see clearly. And those who can't are the false patriots, those who, you know, really get the, you know, they think of the idea of liberty but can't seem to break down the walls in our minds that prevent us from moving. So that is on Thursday nights, and that delves very much into divine providence, the role of the Creator, both in the Constitution and now, both from the perspective of retribution and so forth. So anyway, those two shows were the bulwark of Revolution Radio, and we like to see them as revolutionary because we want to be practical about strategies, break down the walls in our minds so we can bring about the Second American Revolution. So that happened. Now, then Saturday nights, I just decided, you know, Saturday nights in Wyoming, there are not a lot of places to go, so that's sort of a free night where I usually play music or play Delegate Jeff Williams from Washington State's Paradigm Shift. He's really a wonderful radio host and does a podcast that I like to catch and rebroadcast and so forth. So sometimes I do Saturday nights and not. Now there's a new show on Tuesday nights, and that is really sort of venturing even further into Christianity and into the role of God and divine providence. I didn't come up with the idea of the show, but the co-host of Walls in Our Minds, and also, you know, Tallulah probably, have come up with this wonderful idea of kind of taking a look at passages in the Bible, Bible study, and their relationship to today, and how that no matter what your faith is, and I'm going to exclude Islam for this moment because that's more of a political ideology than a religion or faith, in my view. But no matter what your faith is, you got to find it now because there's nothing out there. And, you know, I don't think it's pagan to, I'm trying to describe their show. In any case, there are, not throw my opinion in there, but they just started Tuesday night last night, and their show is the Fern Foundation. So Mama Cooks, a.k.a. Janet, and Tallulah will be hosting that show. So of the four nights of Revolution Radio, let's see, it started with one, and we've revolved into four. They're really different pieces. So I would have to say if you want to get an unpredictable but quality show, show up on Wednesday nights. If you really want to hear what Red Beckman and Terry Dodd, the interesting stuff they're doing, and they have fabulous guests and run a very tight and fantastic show, show up there too. And Saturday nights, if you're around kicking back, it's also the podcast that you can carry with you if you want. There's usually some old-time music, which gives away my age, I suppose. And so that's where I am. All shows have evolved. They're all under the rubric of Revolution Radio, particularly with regard to your faith. As you know, stand up for it. How hard it is right now. It's revolutionary to stand up for your faith. We've been taught to be politically correct for so long, it's corrupted our ability to see and to be human. So in any case, it's quite an interesting issue. Before I bring in our guest, I'd like to say good evening to our guests and to Invalid Response, good evening, and No Nonsense Nancy, nice to see you, and to all the listeners I can't see, you're welcome to join in. The call-in number is 347-838-9176. Now, this evening, I'm delighted to have joined with us James Dowling from Michigan. Are you there?
Yes, hi. Good evening, Dr. Kate. How are you?
Good evening. Good evening, Jim. Nice of you to join us. As I was telling you, it was terrific to have you call me today. I want to welcome you, everybody. This is Jim Dowling, James Dowling, Continental Congress delegate from Michigan. And did you get the election materials, by the way?
I didn't have a chance to look for those yet, but I'm sure they're waiting for me when I do.
They're there. Well, you're welcome. James is an active delegate of the Third Continental Congress. For all of our listeners, we are moving on, and we are having elections in about a week and a half. And there's so much work to do, the 10th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment, right to life, judicial reform, and civil actions. This was a interesting portion of the Continental Congress. And were you on the Civic Action Committee, Jim?
I was on the mostly on the War Powers, Article 12 War Powers, and mm-hmm. Articles 1 and 2 of the Constitution that directed their focus on the declaration of war authorization that's mm-hmm. reserved specifically for the Congress, and how the presidency over the years has devolved into kind of skirting around Congress, or they kind of wink and nod at each other and don't follow what the Constitution says. And we believe, and a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, believe that this has caused us a lot of ongoing trouble and expense and disdain around the world.
Yeah, led to everything that where we are at now. Now, Jim, forgive me. Before we launch into our discussion, please tell us about your background, what you're doing now, and in particular, the citizenship package that you have available, which I find terrific.
Okay. I'm not sure how much you've covered about the Continental Congress and the Articles of Freedom, how familiar your listeners are with that, but we basically started from a grassroots concept by an organization that, like others around the country, saw that there was a need for a little more focused action beyond what we would call Tea Party activity type things, but focus on actually nailing down the reasons we're dissatisfied with the current state of unconstitutional governance in America, and then basically the Articles of Freedom are more or less a letter directly to the elected officials, showing them where they've sidestepped or ignored the Constitution, and most of the time we say why that is not correct. For governance for our servant government in America. And then we follow each one of those 14 or 15 articles of freedom with recommended civic actions. Now, I hear, if you don't mind if I just carry on for just a little bit.
Not at all. Please do.
Okay, thank you. I hear a lot of people when I go to Tea Party things or political rallies or different kinds of things. I listen to, like a lot of people, listen to a lot of talk radio, and one of the most common things you'll hear from people who are really concerned about what's happening is, what can I do? What can I do? And a lot of times they're directed toward different types of activism, petition websites, etc. And that's all good. That is a contribution that we definitely need in America. But beyond that, if you were to get a copy of the Articles of Freedom and look at the 15 articles that we have in there, you're going to discover that the Continental Congress has made more than 85 different kinds of recommendations of what the citizens can do to promote constitutional governance. And what's really great is there are 60-some pages of the Articles of Freedom, and it's a little bit much for a person to use it as a checklist and say, I'm going to do all of these civic actions that are recommended by Continental Congress. It's really too much for one person, but the size of it enables you to pick one or two areas that are keen interest to you. Well, let's say you have a Second Amendment issue that you really are really strong about, and you would like to be involved in that area, you can go to the Articles of Freedom, look in the index, and see which one of the articles addresses that specific constitutional right and or inalienable right, and what does the Continental Congress recommend about that, and you'll see that it goes beyond what the normal, Second Amendment advocacy group might say is, write to your congressman, call your senator, et cetera. This actually, the Articles of Freedom will go so far in that area as to say, look, you need to know where does your local sheriff stand on constitutional issues, and work with your local county board or your sheriff department to try to establish constitutional governance in the form of a recognized lawful militia type organization. My county here in Michigan actually has a framework for that kind of a thing, and they don't call it a constitutional militia, but they call it like a citizens action force or a citizens support group for the county sheriff. And what they do is they participate in various emergency drills and exercises and so on, which is actually the focus of what the original constitutional militias were all about. Beyond that, you wanted me to talk briefly about, I've established a website to try to make the Articles of Freedom available in kind of a unique format. First, I want to let everybody know that these Articles of Freedom, the 60-some pages and everything, are free for you to download, to view, read on the internet, or download and print at your leisure. Absolutely free. And all you need to do is go to the website address, Third Continental Congress, all words, one word, thirdcontinentalcongress.net. thirdcontinentalcongress.net. And on the front page, you'll see a icon for the Articles of Freedom. And you can click at the top of that, and it'll open up, and you'll be able to read them all or print them as you want. And you'll get the 8.5 by 11 full-page copy, and you can print those and give them away or become familiar with them yourself. What I've done is gone one step further, and I've had the Articles of Freedom made into a more or less a pocket-sized, personal-sized booklet, about roughly 4.5 by 5.5 inches. People my age or older may want to have their bifocals on when they're about to read it. But anyway, they're all there, complete, unaltered, just as we approved them in January from the Continental Congress. And it's a little booklet with a nice cover, and I offer those for a donation. I'm trying to raise some funds for another Liberty project, and I call this organization Civil Reaction. And you can check out the website at civilreaction.info. And for anybody who wants to make a donation toward our cause, I will send them the Articles of Freedom booklet that I had printed up, along with a copy of the Constitution booklet. It's the Constitution with the Declaration of Independence, like you've seen in other places. I call that the citizenship set. The focus of civilreaction.info is to promote civic service actions by just common, ordinary citizens. My personal belief is that this is what we've been lacking for the last 50 or 60 years, we've kind of turned over the reins of our Constitution and our government to our elected officials, and just pretty much assumed that they would follow the right course. And if we got upset about this or that issue, then we would write to them, send them letters or send them postcards or give them a phone call and talk to one of their staff people, etc. Meanwhile, while we were pretty much being relaxed on our civic responsibilities, as I see it, the people who don't hold the Constitution and constitutional governance and the principles of liberty that this country was founded on, the people who don't hold those same beliefs or ideals as we do have been basically infiltrating all of our institutions from the ground level right up, and they've been unhindered for 50 or 60 years. And you know that they totally control the educational institutions, more and more the legal system. Certainly, they're very prevalent all throughout government, and especially in the civil service appointment jobs and positions. I'm talking about like in the whole departments of like EPA and energy and education and so on. We've basically let that go on unhampered. And my idea is that we have to start on a long, hard road of working to counter that. And the only way to counter it is not going to be by having one single huge demonstration in a capital. We're going to have to take back the whole system. So how do we do that? Well, civilreaction.info is my idea to generate an interest in creating an organization that will promote local civic service. And what I'm talking about is that, no larger than the county level, where people that are like-minded like you and me and everybody else who just has an hour or two that they're willing to give a week or a handful of hours a month toward good citizenship, civic action in their community, what can they do? Well, first of all, you need support from people who are thinking the same way you are, and so you need to be connected with them. And this organization, which I would call Local Liberty, would be like a club kind of a thing. Well, let's say like a civic service club. You know, there's other ones around like Kiwanis Club or Rotary or whatever that do various community service or civic service type things. And this one would be to promote, how would I put it, to promote just local civic action. Let's say somebody's interested in serving on their local transportation board that serves in their county. That's where their interest was. Maybe the airport board. Maybe the community college board of trustees, or their county commission board, or their township town clerk type of commission. Those things are all available, and over time, by joining together with others in your county who are interested in doing the same thing, you can push back what for 50 years has been pushed at us. I'm hoping I'm making this clear. Do you understand?
You are. I thank you very much, because that's the point. Number one, as you stressed, it's long term. It's not just the 2010 elections. It's not even 2012. It's long term. I'm thinking, frankly, you know, we've got to keep going, but it's gonna take a good 10 years, if not more, to turn this ship around, because it's been going on for so long, and it's so entrenched. Not only are the agencies entrenched as a fixture, but every administration adds its political appointees who, quote unquote, burrow and end up being civil employees who can't be fired. And so the damage continues. They end up in really big positions and so forth. So I think it's very serious. And yes, any of those positions I think are important, particularly county commission, particularly sheriff. You don't have to have, you don't have to have been a cop to be a sheriff. And there are mayor positions and so forth. And it's quite an interesting time we face because none of the parties, if you will, really fit in the context of the Constitution. I think the Republicans, have lost their way and they will stand up for, they won't stand up for anything. They'll whine and complain. And I apologize to people like Michelle Bachmann and others who have stood up. But really, I think about the eligibility issue of Obama. I chaired that committee. And, there are a couple of states that have basically followed the recommendations of the Continental Congress, which I'm very pleased about. But when we talk about the Constitution, that is also part of the Constitution. So all of these things that Obama is doing could be undone if the first threshold issue question was actually addressed. And I think so many people know, they just don't know what to do about it, if you will. So what do you do? That also became a local level issue. On your state level, just make sure you have the guy prove themselves as a condition of being on the ballot. Arizona did that. I think there are a couple of other states that have done that as well. So civic action at the local level, I really think is important. And I'll tell you from my experience, I go over to Idaho and do some work there, and it's the same thing. People want some local action, and here people are talking about some of the education ideas that came out of the education or the civic action section that didn't actually make it into the Articles of Freedom, but taking, one day a month, taking your kids out of school to do some education on the Constitution, because they're certainly not doing it in the schools. So tell me, by the way, to the listeners, I got a copy of the citizenship package, and I really like it. And James gave me two copies, and if he hadn't inscribed on one of them, I probably would have given that away too. But and the one that I kept is all dog-eared already, like I was telling you, because it's a very handy tool to have in your pocket, and pull it out, and it's good. Now, anyway, so tell me, what kind of reaction are you getting there in Michigan, and what do you see going on, and is there constitutional awareness growing? And you mentioned how the Articles of Freedom are a good place to channel that energy. Is it being picked up? What do you see going on there?
Well, what we've been doing here in Michigan is we have three delegates. Unfortunately, you're the lone. Is that right? You're the lone delegate there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you have some freedom of latitude of whatever you want to do. You can do without having to have a meeting first, but. The way it is here in Michigan is we have three delegates. I'm the second delegate, and I'm just basing it on the number of votes to be elected, and I received the second number of votes. So we confer together, the three delegates, when we need to, by phone and, of course, with email. And what we decided, the other two delegates are located on the other side of the state over in the Detroit area, and I'm stuck here on the Sunset Coast of Lake Michigan and in the Farm Belt area of Southwest Michigan, and I like it that way. But anyway, what we have done here in Michigan is we've taken the Articles of Freedom, and we printed them up in a nice spined booklet, full size, to give to elected representatives. And then I wasn't able to participate, but the other delegates, along with quite a few volunteers, have delivered those to about 120 state elected delegates, or officials in Michigan. We had them printed up, put a binder cover on them with a introductory letter, and then they were delivered in person at the state capitol, or in the case of our senators and U.S. congressmen, to their offices there. Let's see, they delivered about 120 of them in person over two or three visits, all in the same week, towards the end of April there. And the response from the elected officials has been a lot of quiet, but some good comments, encouraging comments. And we're pretty positive because of the way that they were presented in a very professional manner, and in a very, you know, a professional style of booklet given to them, that they will take the time to read them. I'm sure we'll get mixed reviews, and some of them probably won't hear anything back. But what we've done is, with that presentation, is requested then a follow-up meeting after they've had a chance to digest the material and find out the concerns that are in there. Then to have a follow-up follow-up meeting with us in their offices, and just discuss these things face to face, and get a feel for where they stand, and really try to push those who have who are amiable to push various things. For example, like everything related to state sovereignty, the 10th Amendment should be a very important issue in each of the states, and we see some states really having a strong movement in that area. In other states, we don't hear anything. I think Michigan is certainly not one of the front runners in that area, not like, let's say, Oklahoma or something, or Texas, or apparently Arizona has some impetus in their state legislature also. We lack that to that degree, but there is some interest here in Michigan. So, from the volunteer level, I don't live in a heavily populated area, and I'm not exactly a networking kind of a person. My other two delegates over on the other side of the state in the Detroit metropolitan area, they're seeing a lot of good response, and so we're all encouraged by that. They keep meeting more and more volunteers, people who want to pitch in and help. So we're hoping that continues to grow.
That's terrific. That sounds like some excellent work there. You know, we have an election coming up. We have an agenda to finish as the Third Continental Congress. And I wondered if I could ask you to sort of look forward in terms of what you think we ought to be doing, and how should we have a civic actions chapter, notwithstanding that there are, 85 recommendations there. What do you see going forward as we work and finish up our terms in October 2011?
Oh, for the Continental Congress, do you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I really haven't given that. I have been really concerned that we stay viable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through some changes. We've had people sort of undermine our effort and bring us to a standstill, and you're aware of all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really had some good, strong-minded people like yourself and Terry Dodd and Dan Gonzalez as delegates from around the country pitch in and to keep Gene Brokaw up in Alaska. I've been mostly thinking about those things and how can we best keep ourselves viable, first of all, and you've really gone a long way in drafting some bylaws for us so that we all understand what we're doing. And that's where we ran into trouble initially, is we ran gung-ho toward getting the Articles of Freedom done, and we didn't build the groundwork underneath it, really. But once we establish our viability and get moving again, I would like to see us promote a couple well-thought-out, I don't want to say causes, but or at least principles, and espouse that, and somebody from our organization step forward as a spokesman. Spokesperson, let me rephrase that, but someone to speak on behalf of constitutional governance, actually, and the preservation of our liberties. And I see so many opportunities where elected officials are timid to put their political career on the line, to speak out in something that until they gauge whether or not it's going to be politically beneficial to them. And that doesn't help us at all, because meanwhile, the people who are taking our liberties continue unabated. So I'd like to see us take a risk, step out there and, one of my really, maybe my all-time hero, who's not a religious figure, is George Washington, and time and time again he laid it all out on the line, and he was just a real humble servant of a person. And if we emulated his actions in the course of his public life, we would all benefit very greatly, I think.
I agree. And it is constitutional governance. I don't know if you were here for the beginning of the show, but that is really what Revolution Radio is talking about here. And we live it every day. And at the same time, my goodness, we, you know, as you say, someone needs to step up and take a risk on something. And
meantime, could I just make a suggestion that
yes.
In between our public gatherings of tea parties or whatever in our local communities and so on, if people have the chance to look back into the foundation of the Constitution, where did the ideas come from in there, the principles and so on, they're just going to be totally amazed and really, really gratified to see that line after line after line of the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution come from age-old principles that have been thought out and worked for and held in high esteem for ages. You know, you go back to starting with John Locke, if you read his second treatise on government, or you read, there's a man named St. George Tucker who was actually a contemporary of the people who wrote the Constitution, and he served, I believe it was in the South Carolina legislature. He wrote a really good book where he, after the Constitution was finalized, he is one of the premier legal scholars in America, looked at the Constitution that America had just invented and wrote his thoughts of it from the perspective of somebody who had been fought in the Revolution, and what it meant for him and how he saw it benefiting our country. Before that, you know, you want to find out, go back and read some of the Republic writings by Cicero. You don't have to read them all, and a lot of them aren't germane to America's situation, but some of the key aspects, and you'll be able to pinpoint them and then read those. They just are just, it's overwhelming when you discover the gifts that we have in our Constitution. It really is a miracle. It's an intervention by God's hand, no doubt, through ordinary people just like you and me, who got together over the years in Philadelphia and New York and made this country, and how they stuck to, how they came out with the end product that was none of them were worthy of, is just, it's totally awesome. It gives you great respect for what we have, and there is no finer way on this side of heaven to operate a civil society but by the formula we have in our Constitution.
Well, I agree, and I thank you so much for that very articulate discussion of the things we should learn now and know, because we were not taught these things. These were not common reading items on the reading list, as far as I know, when I grew up. But also, it's that Constitution is only 4,400 words in those six articles, and it's unbelievable. And, you know, again, hearkening back to the eligibility issue, when you look at the three words, natural born citizen, in the context of the Constitution, it's actually very clear. And I'm sure that when you understand the founders read their own copies of Vattel, and, you know, everybody had all this stuff, and it's pretty much written and out there, and, you know, it's natural. You know what I'm saying? It's natural.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when the founders wrote that, as well as the other articles, they never intended the people to have a battery of lawyers interpret those words.
Well, they did the work for us, and that's what's so amazing. The words natural-born citizen, that's a legal term, just like redress of grievance was a legal term. If you go to the law dictionaries from that period, there is a definition for the term natural-born citizen, and it's different than somebody who is a natural citizen or a ordinary citizen.
Mm-hmm.
A natural-born citizen must have, and that was defined back then, and we've lost touch with that, but it still exists in those dictionaries from back then. A natural-born citizen had to have both parents born on that native soil.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the issue is, and we suspect why it's not being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a vehicle for. Unfortunately, it wasn't recommended to us a vehicle to have that checked.
Go ahead.
I understand that one state is, I can't remember which one it is now, is maybe it's Arizona, is attempting to address that, and they've go ahead if you have some insight into
that. With Arizona. It's basically, and it's like they read the Articles of Freedom, and maybe Ed Vallejo was successful, you know, because we recommended, and, you know, the Congress recommended that the states pass legislation that would require a presidential candidate to submit, you know, the documentation that he is a natural-born citizen, he or she is a natural-born citizen, as a condition of having their name put on that state's ballot.
Yeah.
So, and this is why, you know, Obama is doubly angry at Arizona, because both the eligibility bill and the immigration bill were passed about the same time, so he's kind of stuck because, you know, he might be an illegal immigrant. You know?
Right.
So, but regardless of that, they're just going to have to be essential, but the Constitution is exquisite, and, you know, people want to make it a living thing. I did some work on that, you may have read on my blog, because I was trying to find out how the Constitution became, you know, changed from a solid rock foundation that would endure over time, as I understood it, to something malleable called a living document.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it was science, the whole Darwin organism kind of thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, basically perverted that. And they began to view the Constitution as, quote, evolving an interpretation with the time. Mm-hmm. And with regard to those natural-born citizens, they can try as much as they can in the 14th Amendment or Wong v. Ark, you know, Kim Ark, the various cases that have gone on, and, you know, and it doesn't change it. Natural-born citizen is what it is. And I'm laughing because how perfect. It's, quote, natural. What do you mean by that? You know, it's certainly not cesarean section, but, you know,
right.
If you're a natural-born citizen, you're born in this country of two parents who are citizens.
Right.
Natural to me in that sense. So I'm saying, I mean, the words, every word was weighed, I am sure.
But beyond being applicable in this particular instance and having it being characterized as a personal assault for whatever reason, actually, when you think about it, isn't that good governance? Isn't that the way a civilization, a civilized society would address a problem is, or good governance is to verify that, you know, I can't just show up at the Olympics and say, oh, well, I'm a marathon runner. You know, I have to have some kind of credentials and so on. Mm-hmm. And people who are going to represent another people have to be from them. You can't have an outsider represent you, not with true representation, and because their loyalty or their judgment, even their frame of reference and knowledge can be vastly different than the people they're representing, and they wouldn't do the best job. So I think, you know, it's incumbent on this state, Secretary of State in each of the states, or prior to being considered by the Electoral College or whatever, somehow there needs to be a mechanism put in place that everybody understands and recognizes for validity, because especially today, this is the first instance with President Obama, but we can see that the way people move around and people have multi-nationalities and people are, you know, people move around the globe nowadays. That becomes an issue that we could see again and again down the road in various capacities.
Yeah, and one of the things that greatly disturbed me is the feeling like the trust, you know, was broken, because I think one of the factors that allowed him to get where he was that people just couldn't believe it, that anyone would actually have the guts to run when they weren't eligible.
Yeah.
You know, and this mask of being a constitutional lawyer and all that kind of stuff, I mean, it was, whoa. And it turns out the guy really studied the Constitution and found out there was nothing we had in place to prevent this from happening. And now, you know, and now there's every evidence in the world that he's not a natural-born citizen. He's bowing to everybody all over the country. There's some serious concern about this Gulf rig oil explosion. British Petroleum, helped financed by the South Korean government. And who is the biggest recipient of campaign funds in 2008 from British Petroleum? And, the dismantling of our nuclear defenses. So I hope, too, that we step up to the plate and really take on a number of items. And just to let you know, we have developed a new – well, we haven't developed it, but the Continental Congress now has a new online meeting tool that's going to make it so much easier for us to communicate and develop and get the word out. It has the capacity, when we need to have as many as 3,000 people join in a session, so it's, and I'm certainly not replacing that with civic action, but our abilities now to communicate very quickly, I think this is something the Continental Congress will really help with. So,
yeah, well, it's an aspect that we definitely need, even if just to be observed by more people, and to have more, have input from a broader spectrum. Sometimes it seemed like we were working in the dark, and it sure was a it was a life-changing event for me to serve there in St. Charles in the Continental Congress. I'm sure it had some pretty profound effect on you also.
It sure did.
As did, and it was it was glorious and frustrating all at the same time.
It took me months to catch up on my sleep, I think.
Well, I want to describe for your listeners here, can you imagine getting, 120 people from all corners of the country who are fierce independents and putting them all with no sleep for what, 11 days in the same room and have them come out with unanimous type decisions. And every one of them has a strong self-will, and I was just overwhelmed by the diversity of intelligence and background, but the oneness of commitment to constitutional governance and helping, serving America in that capacity. It was just overwhelming.
Well, it really was. And, you know, we're coming up on a break right now, and I wanted to share with you, too, I had the same experience I was talking earlier in the show. There's no way that could have happened without divine intervention, with divine providence there. And I've been one of the resistant ones, I would say, but, there are a lot of things happened for me in the last couple of years, but that Continental Congress was something.
Would it be okay if I said goodbye to you then at this break? And,
sure. Are there any last thoughts you have you'd like to come back on again?
I would like to actually hear from some of your listeners next time. I would like to do
very
that.
Good. I was looking, if anyone has any questions, they're welcome to call in, but right now no questions yet. And thank you very much, James, for coming by, and I look forward to speaking with you and working with you, and I thank you for your efforts and sharing a vision with us from Michigan. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much, and you have
okay.
a good evening.
And
bye.
Yeah, and you too. Thank you. We're going on break. Be back in a few minutes.
Okay.
Very poignant. This evening I'm thinking about a lot of things, about the original 13th Amendment that would have prevented lawyers and judges from being in government and how different our government would be, about the change, the significant change that happened after and during the Civil War, about the Act of 1871, United States, Inc., about the various assassinations, about the first guy who really was not a natural-born citizen being sworn in when his president was assassinated, Garfield was assassinated, Chester Arthur. And then Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and the change that occurred around the early 1900s, imperialism, the outright perversion of the Constitution, the changing it. Wilson was the first one to speak out about, with displeasure about the Constitution, but Roosevelt was not above violating it in his own way and causing, essentially, these characters caused, in a lot of ways, the Federal Reserve, World War I, World War II, that kind of action. I read a statement once that talked about the 20th century being a waste, and a waste of opportunity, and look at what it was. It was wars, depression. We're still in poverty. We're still in wars. We're now in depression again. Look at the advances that have been made, and for what? All of this, so a few thousand, a handful, not any more than 4,000 people, control what we have right now. Yes, we have been asleep. We can point to them, but three fingers point back at us. So it is a must And now we look around and we say, where are our leaders? And we find out that anytime somebody stands up, they're co-opted. And the people who are standing up right now just very well might be false patriots. And then we find that our strength is in our diffusion. You know, when the old granny sits there knitting and says, I'm the leader of the Tea Party, who are you going to go after? They are blaming the militia for everything. The outrageous statement of Bloomberg, who said that the Muslim radical who planted the bomb in Times Square, he said of the, whoever it was, that person, they were probably an anti-healthcare person trying to connect it to the Tea Party. They are desperate, folks, for us to do something. But we need our leadership. We need to remember what we are doing here. We need to move forward as quickly as we can. I'm going to bring us back to a time with a song that I know you'll all remember. And it is, you know, the old 60s time when people were really beginning to wake up in a way. That, too, was co-opted, wouldn't you say? Those were the Bill Ayers and the other folks who went into radicalism, and then all those, a lot of those 60 folks like Carrie and Dodd and all those people, they just cut their hair and put on a suit and worked from within. This was the plan. So I'll be back in a couple of minutes, and I hope you'll pardon me, but I think you'll enjoy this music. Be right back. Did they know back then what this was about? Or did they have a different view of freedom? Thank you, Richie Havens. Nice to bring back that view. I know I certainly didn't understand what was going on. Now, I want to just take the last few minutes here. I'm going to end the show early this evening. First, I want to just offer my condolences to all of you as far as the beginning of this show. I said, you know, we're talking about various things and the various different revolution radios, and I did not mean to exactly treat you with a tirade or, you know, my own personal opinion, but tonight that's the way it's going to be, so thank you for indulging me. But now I want to talk about this very serious Islam, problem with Islam, radical Islam that's happening here. There was nothing we could do at the Continental Congress on this, but something's going to have to come up and talk about it because it's absolutely an invasion of our country. And you cannot help but know that Obama's strategic actions are basically encouraging the invasion of these, or not necessarily invasion, they may have been here for a while, but the explosion of these sleeper cells, seemingly random actions targeting. Now, it is really clear that part of this is false flags. Part of this is some effort to try to blame the militia. But is actually, this is a serious issue in Europe. The goal of Islam is to dominate the world, period. You know, is that a religion or a political philosophy? You make a choice. I have already. Architecture, schools, everything. You know, after the Christmas Day bomber, the new full machines were supposed to take care of this. Well, guess who's exempt from those full machines because it's against their quote-unquote religion? Hello? Americans got attacked, and now our government turns around and attacks Americans. That's great. But these are serious things. These are seemingly random, but these are cells popping up. These are events happening, and it's like Russian roulette. Maybe I'm sure the Russians are involved, but it's a gamble with our lives. And this is why it's absolutely necessary to be a birther, for heaven's sakes. Help birth our country back. It is necessary to amass this person because what we had in 2008 was not an election. It was a coup. And yeah, you look at the whole issue, since when have we really had an election? Okay, but we're dealing with now. We can't afford to take blame right now or point blame. We have to think strategically moving forward. So Islam is an issue, and I wanted to point out an article I read about a camp in Islam. I can't remember the town that it was in, but right outside in the Poconos, there's an armed compound of radical Islamic militants who are using the place as a training ground. Apparently there are helicopters that fly over the local town looking for anyone, you know, any outsider being there. Outsiders forbidden to be there and so forth, but we have the federal government raid the, you know, the Michigan militia, the Hutetree group, and, you know, come down real hard on the Tea Party and try to make veterans returning home, military people returning home as outrage folks. Well, it turns out that this compound has been there for a while, and there are some relationships with the Clintons. I don't recall all the specifics. I will try to find the link and put it in the chat. But bottom line is this. When you think about, and please understand I have great affection for the Clintons. When I put that aside, I have to look at what has happened. And during the Clinton administration, we had Waco, we had the first failed 9/11 attack, which turns out the feds had a chance to blunt, and they didn't. We had Ruby Ridge, I believe, at the same time, Oklahoma City. And if you look at all of that, who is getting the blame for, you know, for this? Is, you know, the McVeighs, now we, the Tea Party people, the Patriots, are turning into that. They're trying to blame the militias, but what I see happening is the Muslims, perhaps in cooperation with the government or other, are basically doing some of these things to encourage our outrage. So I am outraged right now. I can't believe there is already Sharia finance. You know darn well that Tim Geithner is part of this as well, and Obama. There's already Sharia finance and Sharia courts in our country. I don't think that they are consistent at all with the U.S. Constitution or the judicial system. So these are issues we have to address, but look, we have to be politically correct. Don't forget, don't say anything bad, okay? We can say something on the radio show because nobody knows where we are. But you see what's happening is a very fine line, and we're being pressured and pushed into saying nothing for fear of offending. And this is serious because these people are serious about killing us. So when you stand together with others, but know what's going on here and also pick your time to do so. We are in the midst of what our founders feared was a takeover. The left has gone wild. The right doesn't know what to do. Those paradigms don't work. Paradigm shifts don't work anyway. Nobody's giving the Tea Party any steam except us. Where are our leaders? We are they. And so as you look around, remember that, and leadership as well brings that out in others. And remember to steel yourself, get healthy, be strong, eat well. I should follow my own advice. But strength and endurance is going to be necessary, and they're counting on us to not be that way. So consider yourself in a training program for the Patriots and for our country. And start today. Start right now. As my friend Terry Dodd from Colorado would say, take your MMS. As I would say, drink your hot water. Drink good water. Listen to good music. Take the time for yourself. Remember where we're at right now. We're in the midst of a revolution. My friends, thank you for indulging me very much. I apologize if it was boring to all, but perhaps you had some music. And I'm going to finish up with quite a lengthy song this evening. It's about 12 minutes. It's by a very talented but deceased artist, Michael Petrucciani. You know, disabled in a lot of ways, but became an incredible piano player, finding the joy. And this song is called 100 Hearts, and that's what I would offer all my listeners, 100 hearts and strength. And good evening, and thank you for joining us this evening.